The killing of Terry Lloyd and the disappearance of his cameraman and translator was no straightforward friendly fire incident. The attack on the ITN crew was more than just another tragic error in the fog of war. American tanks opened fire on TV vehicles in the middle of the desert, in the middle of the day. Precisely why they did and what happened next remains a mystery. There are too many unanswered questions. The American government has so far told ITN nothing of what they know, despite a promise from the very highest level.
I give you my personal promise. We will do everything we can to find out what happened.
ITN has evidence that puts American tanks, American soldiers, and even a military film crew at the scene. But we don't have the answers. Tony Blair paid tribute to Terry Lloyd when the news of his death came through.
He was, of course, someone of huge experience in these situations who reported with very, very great bravery and distinction. And his loss will be felt not just in this country, actually, but throughout the world.
But more than a month later, the war is over. Terry has been buried. And with little help from the British or American governments, we are still waiting for answers.
This, until a few hours ago, was an Iraqi frontline stronghold. Nothing much to see, just a couple of porter cabins where the Iraqi flag still flies.
The final dispatch of ITV's longest-serving correspondent. The crew of four sent this story on the morning of Saturday, the 22nd of March. It was day two of the war in Iraq, and coalition troops had crossed the Kuwaiti border, heading for the country's second city, Basra. Terry Lloyd and his team planned to follow them, to witness the fall of the city, the jubilant crowds, the first great victory of the war. But within hours, the team were caught in an attack between US and Iraqi forces that left Terry dead, with cameraman Fred Nirak and translator Hussein Osman still missing to this day. There's no doubt that the crew were in the wrong place at the wrong time, on this desert road outside Basra. The wreckage from the battle is still strewn along the roadside. With no help from the military, ITN has been forced to go it alone, to conduct a full investigation into the attack, hoping to answer two key questions. Who killed Terry Lloyd, and what happened to Fred Nirak and Hussein Osman? In a survival story not short of a miracle, cameraman Daniel Demoustier was able to escape the scene. This was his car. His recollections mean we're able to piece together some of what happened that day.
The same moment the hell started. Gunfire came from that direction. The windshield went straight away. I ducked down under the steering wheel, and it was awful. I mean, I could see the bullets fly through the dashboard. The dashboard was going all the way through the car. And I was screaming because I knew I was going to die. I was absolutely sure. And I look up and Terry Lloyd is gone. He's out of the car.
Based on Daniel's first-hand account and other evidence ITN has since gathered, this is what we now believe happened that day. The two ITN cars were on the road from Kuwait to Basra. Daniel and Terry were in the first car, Hussein and Fred following in the second. After passing the final coalition checkpoint, they were waved on near the outskirts of the city. As they neared the bridge at the entrance to Basra, they saw Iraqi soldiers walking in their direction. Daniel did a fast U-turn and accelerated at about 100 kilometers per hour towards safety, the coalition line. He checked in his rearview mirror and confirmed the second ITN vehicle was still with him. He then saw Fred and Hussein's car had stopped, so he did the same. The cars then were about 150 meters apart. In his mirror, Daniel saw a white Iraqi vehicle next to the other ITN car with a group of people milling around. Then when he saw that Fred and Hussein's car was moving forward again, he also resumed driving more slowly to allow the other vehicle to catch up. Suddenly out of nowhere, the Iraqi vehicle was alongside him, carrying four Iraqis in military uniform wearing claret-coloured berets. The Iraqi vehicle was a pickup with a gun mounted at the rear. They were smiling, giving him thumbs-up signs and pointing forward. He thought they were indicating they wanted to surrender. But the Iraqi soldiers could have been using Daniel and Terry's car as cover to protect themselves from American tank positions less than 200 metres to the south. The firing began at that point. It's not clear who fired first, the Iraqis or the Americans. The TV car was caught in the crossfire and took bullets from both sides. It was a major firefight. The American tank shot at all three cars, and the Iraqi soldiers fired back from their machine gun mounted on the back of the pickup. Terry disappeared out of the passenger door to Daniel's right as Daniel tried to duck down under the steering wheel. The vehicle left the road and went about 40 metres across country. As the firefight continued, Daniel jumped out of the car, which then exploded. He lay in a ditch while the tanks continued to fire. We don't know what happened to Fred and Hussein. Daniel picks up the story here.
I stayed in the ditch while gunfire was still continuing on the car and towards my direction. So I had to stay, you know, I had to duck down for at least half an hour or so, until I thought it was sort of safe to start slowly moving, or crawling, basically. But I could see our second car was unharmed, sort of about 200 metres down the road. The doors were open.
Daniel saw an Iraqi ambulance arrive on the scene. It took away some of the wounded in the Basra direction. He remained in the ditch, pinned down by gunfire.
And then suddenly I noticed another press vehicle was arriving, a car who was with us, well, I saw before, a few miles down the road. And I took a risk and I run to that car and I made it. And these were people from the Mail on Sunday, and they took me out. So.
This incredible figure came out of the ditch, sort of half running, half crawling towards us, his hair full of what looked like, you know, cement dust and blood down his face, and talking in French and asking for a hospital for his friends. And, you know, there's no hospital around here. And then quite quickly realising he was a journalist, I said, get in the car, because the tanks, you could hear what I now know are probing rounds, apparently, from the tanks on to our left. And it was noisy, you know. There were helicopters above, it was noisy, and there was this mortar position we just passed. So the whole thing was, you know, and here's this guy. So get in the car, and then we all went off. And he wasn't in shock or anything like that, but he, you know, he was talking, you know, got to get my friends out. We've got to go in and get my friends. I mean, it was impossible to go in there. It was, you know, effectively the front line. He said that he, you know, when this firing started, and he couldn't believe it could have come from British or American. At that time, we didn't know if those tanks were British or American, but he didn't want to believe it, and we didn't want to believe it. But he said when the firing started, and he had put his head, his hands over his head, and his head under the steering wheel, and his foot as far as he could on the accelerator, so he couldn't see anything. And the Jeep had careered off the road. And just before he jumped out of the car, he looked to the other side, and Terry was gone and the doors open. And he said, I think Terry's dead. I think Terry's dead. I'm sure Terry's dead. And I said,
sadly, he was right. By late that night, ITN had received information that Terry's body had been taken from the scene to the morgue at Basra's main hospital. The search then began for the missing members of the team. And so too did questions that have still received no official answer. This despite evidence obtained by ITN that the US military cannot ignore. This photograph shows a US tank at the scene of the attack, right in front of Fred and Hussein's car, within an hour of the firefight. What did the soldiers see? Was there any sign of the two men, dead or alive? This is an official Marines Combat TV crew filming the aftermath for the US military, again within an hour of the attack. What did they see through their lens? What vital evidence was recorded on their tapes? Where are those tapes now? And US forces weren't only at the scene inside their tanks and Humvees. These are soldiers on foot. What did this Marine witness as he walked past the bodies and the wreckage? With conflicting stories over who fired first, why they fired, and what happened next, ITN employed a team of professional investigators to examine the scene and the evidence.
So we're going to move up now to within 150 metres of the incident area, where
two former SAS soldiers working for security company AKE were sent to Basra to piece together the events, a process that we hoped could lead us to find out who killed Terry and what happened to Fred and Hussein. But in a letter to ITN, Defence Secretary Jeff Hoon warned that it was too dangerous to send our own team to the site. However, he added, British forces had already been to the location and there was nothing there. The situation was sufficiently secure to undertake a reconnaissance visit to the site. Nothing relevant to the disappearance of the journalists has been found. But the letter came too late. AKE had already carried out their research, and what they found at the scene suggests Mr. Hoon's account was less than accurate.
We're now stood in the area approximately in the centre of the where the tanks were. There are a number of locations with empty cases of various calibres that have been fired.
Mark, a former SAS soldier, did not want to appear on camera. But here he describes what they saw.
What we do know is that we're stood in the middle of the area where the tanks were definitely located and were definitely firing at the Fedayeen and the ITN crew.
Contrary to the minister's claims, evidence of the attack was strewn across the scene. They found the burnt-out wreck of Terry and Daniel's Pajero exactly where it came to rest that day. It had been looted and stripped bare by local Iraqis. But the bullet holes in the bodywork gave the team crucial ballistic evidence, and the Iraqi pickup was still there too, providing yet more clues for their report. Their first investigation of the scene concluded American and Iraqi bullets had hit Terry and Daniel's car. The American fire had come from the direction of the tanks, and close-range fire had been used too, perhaps as close as 30 metres. But there was no sign of Fred and Hussein, alive or dead, no sign that they'd been injured, treated or even buried at the scene. Fred and Hussein had disappeared. Information we received suggested they had not been treated in any of Basra's hospitals or sent to any of the morgues. But once the siege of the city was over and Basra had fallen into the hands of British forces, we were able to ask the people what they knew. And they were free to answer. Hundreds of posters offering a reward for information were put up across the city. Everyone knew we were desperate to find our missing men. Slowly people came forward, but every account told a different story. Every seemingly reliable witness rendered unreliable by the next. But eventually the trail led to the Ba'ath Party and to the names of its members who were in the Iraqi pickup at the scene of the attack. And an alternative story began to emerge. A story that might explain why there was no trace of Fred and Hussein at the scene. It now seems possible that Fred and Hussein could have been pulled from their car before the firefight. Remember that Daniel told us the second ITN car was stopped on the road by Iraqis who spoke to Fred and Hussein. But Daniel could only see through his rearview mirror, and it's entirely possible that at that moment Fred and Hussein were taken prisoner, and that the Iraqis then stole their car and drove it forward, perhaps unknowingly, into the line of American tank fire. It's also possible that when the Iraqi pickup came alongside Daniel's car, their aim was to stop and arrest Terry and Daniel and steal their car too, again not realising that all the time they were getting closer and closer to the American tanks. And here is Fred and Hussein's car, recently discovered by ITN's investigators. It was taken from the site the day after the battle and was discovered in Azubaya, a suburb of Basra near the scene of the attack. Its new owner claimed he'd found it at the local Ba'ath Party headquarters. But looted and stripped, it gives us no clue as to whether Fred and Hussein were forced to hand it over to the Iraqis who stopped them on the road. But ITN has discovered that the Iraqis at the scene were senior members of Saddam's ruling Ba'ath Party. The powerful Al-Sadoun clan were close to the Iraqi leader and ran much of the party in southern Iraq. ITN has been given the names of several of Saddam's southern henchmen who were allegedly in charge of the attack. We were told that one was killed during the battle, but that others survived and have gone to ground. But the most significant new information we have is that up to 8 Iraqis at the scene were captured by American forces and are being held as prisoners of war in nearby Umm Qasr. So here again, ITN needs the assistance of the US and British military. This time not over the details of why they attacked our crew or whether they fired first, but to help us find out what happened after the attack, to find out what happened to Fred and Hussein. We urgently need to know if the POWs being held at the Umm Qasr camp have any information to give. They may well have all the answers. And we need the power and authority of British forces in charge of the Basra area to pursue the members of the hostile Al-Sadoun clan, who could end the mystery over the 2 missing men. Hussein's wife waits in Lebanon with their 2 children. Fred's family still cling to the hope that he may still be alive. In her desperation for information, his wife Fabienne bravely spoke in front of the world's media to demand that the US Secretary of State find out what happened to her husband.
My husband is missing since your forces shot on his car. I sent you a personal letter this morning asking you for information, and I would like to know if you are going to give me this information.
I understand your feelings, and as soon as we heard of it yesterday, from my plane, we immediately contacted our military authorities in the region and asked them to look into it, and they have been looking for the last 18 hours. But so far, we have not received any information that it would be useful to you. But I give you my personal promise, we will do everything we can to find out what happened.
Yet 4 weeks on, Fabienne has had no answers, no information from Colin Powell, just assurances they are investigating, doing all they can. Have they questioned the soldiers in the tanks who were on the scene? Have they asked the Marine who walked past the twisted burning vehicles what he saw? Have they looked at what their own combat TV crew recorded on that day? If they have, they haven't shared any of that information with ITN or with the families of the missing men. And that silence is echoed in Britain, where despite ITN's repeated calls for an investigation, none has been forthcoming. This is what Defence Secretary Jeff Hoon said when pressed on the matter during a recent visit to Basra.
Well, can I say I certainly well understand why people are concerned, and we have been in regular contact with ITN discussing the whereabouts of these 2 men following on the tragic death of Terry Lloyd, and those are efforts that we will continue in cooperation with ITN.
Do you believe, though, that you've got any sorts of leads, any sort of indication, any information, any intelligence you could pass on that would give a better idea after such a long wait as to where on earth they might be?
Well, certainly we are in continuing discussion with ITN about the information that they believe is relevant and the information that we have. We certainly will continue to discuss that with them.
That's not enough for those left behind, waiting, hoping, and praying. They want answers from the politicians.
They can't easily close the forget about Fred, but we can't. So we have to know, and for our living, for me and his children.